Save WICC 600 in your presets, and you'll never miss anything Lisa has to say. The Lisa Wexler Show, WICC 600.
Well, this is very exciting for us because we have such a Connecticut connection to the subject of this latest of Randy Tarabarelli's books. This gentleman's been on our show before to talk about his book about Sinatra, but he makes it a point to write about some of the most intriguing, interesting, famous celebrity figures of our time, including Marilyn Monroe and Michael Jackson, Diana Ross, Beyonce, the Kennedy heirs, even the Hiltons. But this latest one is about the women of the Bush dynasty. Randy Tarabarelli, welcome back to the Lisa Wexler Show. The book is called Grace and Steel. Welcome back.
Lisa,
hi.
Hi, Lisa. It's great to be back. How are you?
I'm well. Okay, first of all, I only got this book a few days ago. I only had a chance to skim it. It's so delicious. It's such a beautiful book. And I love the subject matter that you chose, the women of the Bush dynasty. First of all, the title itself, the Bush dynasty, is an interesting title. Tell me why you decided that that these women would be the subject of your book. What brought you to this story?
Well, Lisa, about 20 years ago, I interviewed Barbara Bush for a women's magazine. And I had the idea at that time to follow my book, Jackie, Ethel, and Joan, Women of Camelot, with a book about Barbara Bush. But when I approached her with the idea, she was in the process of writing her autobiography. So she passed. And I just went on with my career and did a whole bunch of other books. Then about 2 years ago, I published Jackie, Janet and Lee, which was the story of Jackie Kennedy Onassis and her mother Janet and her sister Lee. And it was a success. My readers loved it. And I thought it might be interesting to apply that same standard to the Bush women, because I was so fascinated by Barbara Bush. And I just always wanted to do something that involved her. And when I did my research and I discovered that Dorothy Walker Bush, George H.W. Bush's mother, wrote a column in a newspaper for 10 years, 3 days a week, called My Life as a Senator's Wife. Her husband was Senator Prescott.
Of course, he was a senator of Connecticut.
Yes.
Right here in Connecticut. We've got real roots to this story. It's fantastic. Go ahead. Yeah.
You really do. Yes. And that her column, there was more than 1,000 columns. And when the Bush Library gave me access to those columns, I was like, wow, this is a real gold mine of information. And this woman, she detailed her life in so specifically in over 1,000 columns that I thought this is a really good foundation for a book.
And tell us about Dorothy Bush. What was revealed by her columns? Was she giving advice to people? Was she commenting on the topics of the day? What was the column?
Well, you know, it was called My Life as a Senator's Wife. And so every day she would comment on the political climate. She would talk about her husband's policies. And more interesting to me for this book, she would talk about her relationship with her daughter-in-law, Barbara. And this was back in the 1950s and 60s, you know, when, I don't know, I think people were a little bit more open because there was less a feeling of judgment, perhaps. Because some of the things that she revealed were so interesting to me that probably today she would never have revealed this kind of information. For instance, she felt that in her own marriage, Dorothy was a feminist long before, you know, the term was coined. And she sought equality in her marriage to Prescott and tried to get Barbara to do the same thing in her marriage to H.W. Bush. She used to tell Barbara that, you know, you don't have to listen to everything that your husband says. You should have a voice in your marriage. And you know, you should, you know, not be directed by him every step along the way. And I thought, wow, it's so interesting that, you know, this is her son she was talking about, you know. For a mother-in-law to tell her daughter-in-law, you don't have to listen to my son, back in the 1950s, was so interesting to me. And it just showed that she was so far ahead of her time. And it also showed that Barbara was more of a conventional woman of the time, because Barbara's position was, no, I really want to listen to my husband. You know, like Barbara's position was, what are you talking about? Of course the wife listens to the husband. You know, so Barbara was more conventional than her mother-in-law, and her mother-in-law was, you know, about 25 years older. So it was very interesting.
Yeah, and it is interesting. And people are very much a product of their times. And I think Barbara Bush in the 50s, there was just mm-hmm. this saturation for the American woman of what an ideal wife was. And it was mm-hmm. it was very subservient, as opposed to, I think, generations before were maybe not so obvious. You know, women on farms and you know, America mm-hmm. was going through its own heave, huge. So the post-World War II thing, I think Barbara Bush was very much a product of. So
she really was. And you're exactly right about that. So how interesting then is it that her mother-in-law wasn't?
Yeah.
You know, and so that's what I just thought was so fascinating.
And was George H.W. the only son of Prescott Bush?
No, they actually had five children. But George H.W., of course, is the most noteworthy of them. They had five children and they had a very good marriage. And, you know, she was a big part of the many of the policies that Prescott Bush put forth in the Senate. And then when Prescott was gone, Dorothy Walker Bush was very involved in, you know, her son's all of her son's political activities.
Yes, I remember that. And she lived a long life, right? She lived to an old age, didn't she?
Yes, she did. She lived to be about 91 years old. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's interesting that in her columns, she wrote about the fact that when Prescott retired in around 1960, she I don't want to say forced him to, but she encouraged him to retire. And she thought that they would have 10 good years left if he retired. But what she didn't count on, she said, was that he loved the Senate so much that he actually had 10 very bad years, you know, without his work. And she felt a lot of regret about encouraging him to retire before he was ready to retire. And I just thought that was so interesting, you know, that a lot of times, you know, your work is what keeps you going. And
yes.
She wished that she had not encouraged Prescott to retire from the Senate when he did.
And, you know, we hear that a lot. We're talking with Randy Tarabarelli. The book is called Grace and Steel, The Women of the Bush Dynasty. We hear that a lot about people, that sometimes after they are taken away from their life's work, they just sort of die away. They don't have the motor anymore. The motor has sort of fizzled out.
Well, yes, you know, and she wrote that, you know, they had for their entire marriage been such a team, and mm-hmm. she wished that she had continued that sort of team mentality at the end. And she said, because if she had been thinking of them as a team, she would have known that what was best for him was to continue to work in the Senate. But she wasn't thinking of it in those terms. She was thinking, well, you know, he's been a senator a long time. He's worked his entire life. How great would it be if we had some time together as a couple? So that's what she was thinking. And, you know, you have these thoughts at the end and you just wonder if you made the right decision. And I thought that was a very human story, but you know, many of the stories in this book, Grace and Steel, just sort of, I think, resonate with my readers because of the humanity behind them. And because we've all had these sort of experiences in our own lives.
I'm really interested in the dynamic between Barbara Bush and Nancy Reagan. You say mm-hmm. that they had such a falling out that Barbara Bush hung up on her or said she would never talk to her again, and she didn't. What happened between the two women?
Well, for the entire time that Barbara was the wife of the vice president and H.W. was Reagan's VP, they had a lot of trouble with Nancy. H.W. writes in his own book that he felt that Nancy was jealous of Barbara because Barbara had such a relationship with the public that the public really sort of embraced Barbara Bush. Whereas with Nancy, the relationship was a lot more sort of prickly, you know. I mean, Nancy wasn't really viewed as a particularly warm person. She was more viewed as a sort of a regal kind of person. And H.W. felt, and I agree after having written the book, that Nancy reminded Barbara of her very critical mother, Pauline. And when you read my book, you'll read that Barbara's mom, Pauline, used to harp on Barbara about her weight and about her appearance. And, you know, she was she always tried to get Barbara to dye her hair. You know, I mean, there. And then when Barbara became vice president, the VP's wife, Nancy Reagan started doing the same thing. And Nancy used to refer to the Bushes derogatorily as the shrubs. Right.
Oh, my God. So, really? Yeah, the shrubs?
Yeah.
Never heard that.
So, you know, Nancy was critical of Barbara, and it triggered Barbara in a way that when you read my book, you're not surprised. When you think when you read about the relationship Barbara had with her mom, you know, I think that our relationships with our parents definitely, you know, and obviously inform who we are for the rest of our lives. And sometimes we meet people who sort of trigger in us whatever it was that our parents triggered in us when we were kids, you know, and that's what was going on, I believe, with Nancy and Barbara.
Yeah, for good or for bad. And you say also that Pauline died in a freak accident, but Barbara didn't even go to her funeral. What happened?
Well, you know, Pauline died in a car accident, and Barbara's father was driving, and they had an accident, and Pauline died. Wow. And Barbara didn't go to the funeral, you know, she just made a decision, you know, and Dorothy, her mother-in-law, felt, wow, you know, Dorothy says, I'd never heard of a daughter who didn't go to her mother's funeral. And Dorothy felt like she was going to really regret that. And in later years, Barbara, well, when I interviewed her, Barbara said that she did regret it, you know, that she felt like she never had the closure that she needed where her mother was concerned. And, but it was a decision that she made back when she was young that I think as she became older and had children of her own, she began to regret.
So she was younger when her mother died. She wasn't the VP's wife at that point. She was younger.
She was in her mid to early 20s when her mother died. You know, yeah. Now then, and then she had a baby. The girl's name was Robin. Actually, her name was Pauline Robin, but Barbara named her after her mom, but they referred to her by her middle name, Robin. And when, you know, Robin was diagnosed with leukemia, she ended up dying at the age of three. And you know, to have a daughter die so young and so tragically, I think was so hard for Barbara, obviously. And if you read my book, you'll see that it threw her into many, many years of deep depression. It took her a long time to recover from the death of her child. And, you know, obviously, I think that you don't ever recover. You just sort of go on with your life, you know, and eventually she was able to, but she suffered with depression for so many years. And here's the interesting thing to me. When I mentioned earlier that she was writing her autobiography when I met her, when that book came out, that was the first time that her son, George W. Bush, and her other children, Doro, and the rest of her children, Neil, and all of them, it was the first time they even knew that their mother suffered from depression. Like, it was
You're
so not discussed in the 1950s and 60s that her own children didn't even know she suffered from depression until they read her autobiography, you know?
And when you, wow. Yeah, and let me ask you this. We're chatting with Randy Tarabarelli. The book is Grace and Steel, and it's about the women of the Bush dynasty. And when you say that she suffered from depression, did she suffer in a way where she sought medical treatment for it?
She did. She sought medical treatment. Eventually, she did land on the right treatment. But, you know, in the 1960s, it was pretty hit and miss, you know. And
it still is to some extent, by the way. It's not perfect even now.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Exactly. A lot of people have to sort of, you know, try different medications before they figure out the one that's going to work. But you can imagine if it's that way today, what it was like in the 60s and 70s, you know, when this was going on. H.W., felt that, you know, his wife was just blue or sad or, you know, having a bad day or, you know what I mean? It was more like, they just felt like, wow, she's sure cranky today. You know, it was that kind of thing. They really didn't know that she was, you know, in real trouble.
And she was raising all these other children, and she was in a very active, incredibly public kind of a life, because the man that she chose was always very public and outward thinking and outwardly ambitious and, you know, moving from post to post and far and I mean, just a million, an exciting life, but very public one with tremendous public demands. And here she was having her inner terrible sadness and inner turmoil. And, you know, I saw an interview with her years ago where she said her hair turned white overnight after Robin died. Did she tell you that, too? Did she tell you that?
Yeah, she did. You know, she didn't say overnight, but she said, you know, very, very quickly. It was during the period of time that Robin was sick with cancer, which was about a six-month period of time, was when her hair, you know, just sort of turned white. And that says a lot right there, you know.
Well, I think she kept it white because I think she wanted to be reminded of her daughter, and she didn't want to walk away from her sadness.
You know, I think you're right. In the book, you know, she's quoted as saying, I need the sadness. Like somebody was saying to her, you have to get over the sadness. You have to get past this. And she said, no, I need this. Like, this is what I have left of my daughter.
Yeah,
and
I believe
I
that.
Don't. Yeah, yeah. It's a, you know, it's such an interesting portrait of Barbara, because I don't know that we think of Barbara as being particularly vulnerable or fragile.
Not at all.
You know, she
put herself as a brick wall to the public.
Right.
Very, you know, very stiff upper lippy and very brick wally and tough, by the way, also tough.
And tough, Lisa. Yeah. I mean, we don't think of her as being particularly vulnerable, fragile, or, you know, depressed or anything like that. But, you know, this has been the case with everybody I've written about. I mean, this is one of the things I've learned as a biographer, you know, is that, you know, people's public persona is pretty much never who they really are. You know, it's pretty much who they've created in order, you know, and by the way, not to trick the public, but sometimes it's a way of coping with the stress of being a public person, that you have to sort of create a persona that's strong and tough, sometimes just to get through the day, you know? And I think that's what Barbara did.
You know, what's interesting too, is I'm listening to you and I'm thinking about the many people that you've written about. There's a difference between those who purposely thrust themselves into fame, who want to be famous, like a Marilyn Monroe, who choose a life and a persona about acting and being in the public sphere, like H.W. himself, versus the people in their orbit who come along for the ride, sort of ish, know what they think they're getting into, but they themselves didn't per se choose it, right? They chose it maybe subconsciously by attaching themselves to a partner who wanted it. Maybe you could argue that. Maybe subconsciously they wanted that life, but it's different. It's different.
You're absolutely right. It is very, very different. And I think that if Barbara had known what awaited her, she would have had second thoughts about George, you know, because she never wanted to be a public person. But neither did Dorothy. You know, when Prescott decided he was going to run for Senate, Dorothy had a lot of reservations about it, because she just felt like, wow, is this what we want for our family? Is this what I want for myself? But Dorothy ended up embracing it, you know, and she just loved it. But it took Barbara all the way up until the time that Barbara became the VP's wife, when H.W. became Reagan's VP. That was when Barbara began to embrace her life as a public person, you know, and that was in the 1980s. So prior to that, you know, she really had a hard time struggling with it. But when she became the VP's wife, Joan Mondale, who was the VP's wife before Barbara, you know, told her that there's so much you can accomplish here as the wife of the vice president. There's so much that you can do. There's so much good that you can do. And she gave her such a great pep talk when she showed her, when she gave her a tour of the VP's mansion, that Barbara became, you know, sort of energized by her position as the VP's wife. And then she never looked back. At that point, she was a public servant.
Yeah. And by the way, was there a specific thing between her and Nancy Reagan that ended the relationship?
Well, yes, you know, unfortunately, Nancy went on television live with Barbara Walters and gave an interview in which she said some disparaging things about Barbara Bush. And after that interview, Barbara Bush called her up. And by this time, Barbara was out of the White House completely. And she called her up and she said, you know, you and I should never have another conversation. And she hung up on her. And I think that that was so liberating for her. I think that, you know, she really needed that. She needed that power because she felt so subservient to Nancy for such a long time. And you know what? Sometimes when you hang up on a person, that does feel kind of good. I mean, let's be honest, you know?
All right. This book is so great, and I'm running out of time. I can hear the click, click. We're talking with Randy Tarabarelli about Grace and Steele. All right. A little bit of an insight into Laura Bush. Did you get to interview her personally? Did she sit down with you for interviews? Talk to me about that.
No, I didn't get to interview her personally, but I got to go through her papers at the George Bush Library, in which she has a lot of oral histories that, you know, that recount her life in such specific detail. And what I felt about Laura, well, first of all, I think she's an amazing person. I think everybody agrees that, you know, she was an incredible first lady. But when you think about where she came from and the trauma of her teenage years, many people don't know that when she was 17, she was in a car accident where she ran a stop sign and she hit another car, and the driver of that car died. And he was 17 years old, and his name was Michael Douglas. And he was a friend of Laura's from high school, and he died in this crash after Laura, you know, ran this stop sign. And, you know, she spent a lot of years, as I wrote in the book, there was a lot of PTSD connected to that, and yep. A lot of trauma and a lot of difficult years for her to get past. So for her to become the first lady that we've known and love, she sort of rose from the ashes of this tragedy in her life to become that woman that we know so well.
And she raised two pretty fantastic daughters.
She really did. You know, I mean, they're great. And they definitely, you know, they remind people of Laura and also of Laura's mom, Jenna, who I wrote a lot about in this book as well. Jenna Welch is an incredible woman from West Texas. I hope people read about her in this book because I think that she's so inspiring. And I just, I really have a lot of admiration. I have a lot of admiration, as you can tell, for all of these women. I just think these are incredible women.
You like them.
Very much. Yeah, very much. And I think that when you read the book, I think you will leave the book loving each one of them.
Isn't that something? And you know, you're somebody who covers people of all different kind of political, you know, spheres and specters. Do your own politics as an author interfere at all or color or shade these kind of biographies?
You know, it's a great question. It's so interesting that you asked me that because no one has asked me that question on this book tour. And that's a really good question. And the answer is no. You know, because, I mean, I've written about Democrats, the Kennedys. I've written four books about the Kennedys. And now I've written about Republicans. And, you know, what I have found is that people are people. You know, I mean, humanity is humanity. And your politics really doesn't change who you are when you go to bed at night and you close your eyes and you're alone. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the beating heart and the sadnesses and the pain and the sorrows and the joys and the triumphs are all the same no matter your politics. And that's what I like to write about. I mean, I write about human people, not really, you know, not really political figures. My whole thing is really not being a political writer as much as it's being a writer of the human condition. And so thank you for that question. And the answer is no, not really. It doesn't.
We're chatting with Randy Tarabarelli. The book is called Grace and Steele. Go get it. It's fabulous. It's fabulous. You're going to love it. You're going to eat it up. And this is just a little bit of a preview as to how good it is because Randy is such a great writer. And it's not too in the weeds, but it's enough in the weeds. It's good. It's a good balance. tell you, Randy, I'm looking forward to seeing your next book about Meghan and Harry and the Royals. I can't wait for that one. You got to be writing that right now. Come on. You got to be writing that right now, contemporaneously. Yeah, go ahead.
You know what? I got to tell you, I'm not, but I'm working on the Obamas. So
okay.
Lisa, right. I think you're gonna like it, and in 2 years I'll be back with the Obamas.
You will indeed. Randy Tarabarelli, thank you so much. The book is Grace and Steel, The Ladies of the Bush Dynasty. We'll be right back with more of The Lisa Wexler Show. Thanks, Randy.